weekend. Professor Manta Kantrogos from the University of Rishimanda in Vancouver. Thank you.
Thanks for your patience. The last one, I will be trying your patience. Thank you.
Do you want to be doing the job now?
No. This morning, Professor Olivier started with the question, what do we do understand or mean by the term temple? I would like to address a similar concern at the end of our day, at this Vidyajnana Sammelan. How a performer turns her body into temple. I don't have any feast for your eyes. A couple of visuals I will show, but you will have to bear with me. I'm not giving any anthropological studies. I'm not doing any social cultural history at this point, although I do that sometime. But my focus at this point is textual studies, in which I think I have done some research. So my paper today is on Shastra and Prayoga, or the theory and practice, building bridges between text and performance in the Sanskritic tradition. While the general interest of this symposium lies in the relationships between temples, architecture, text, and performance, my presentation focuses on the relation between the formal description and analysis of dance and its practice. My discussion draws exclusively upon the primary source material for our knowledge of the performing arts of India, that is, the extensive body of Sanskrit texts on dance, drama, and music. I must also clarify here that I understand the term dance as a hybrid performance genre that consists of non-mimetic action, nritya. It's printed wrong in the abstract. Non-mimetic action, nritya, as well as mimetic representation, nritya, and the narrative action, natya. But let me first try to bring this discussion closer than it might appear to the theme of the temple in the Indian imagery. Indian imaginary. Indian classical dance has always purposefully situated itself as a regimen of worship. Whether the dancer is in fact a devotee or some deity or not, she or he surrounds herself, usually she, with the symbology of Hindu worship, beginning every performance with the initial stage acts of Pushpanjali and Bhumi Pranama. As in all performance forms in Indian classical dance, the designation of the performance space is essential and deliberate. It is useful to note that many old temples in Kerala have formal structures known by the term Kuttambalam within the temple precincts marked out for Kudiyattam performances. Is this all right?
Yeah, the bottom one.
So this is the temple, the structure of its stage within this building, and this is the inside. I have only four, so you don't have to switch off the light. This is the inside where the performance takes place, and that was the temple precinct. Within that building, this whole thing takes place. And just to make to give an idea, this is all I have taken, and the top of the stage looks like that. So for now, I stop and go back to my text. That the performance space, whether formally designated as the Kuttambalam or selected for a particular performance, is sacred space is obvious from the initiating rituals of the performance. I suggest that the performance act within that sacred space is an architectural trope in which the human body is conceived as a notional temple and the dancer's movements as acts of beautifying the body temple and investing the structure with meaning and purpose. As the 12th century Kannada poet Basavanna said, "The rich will make temples for Shiva. What shall I, a poor man, do? My legs are pillars, the body the shrine, the head a cupola of gold." For the poet, the project is a structure of words. For the dancer, erecting a temple with the fluid movements of her body, lost in the stream of time, as soon as performed, is even harder. The business of dramaturgical text, then, has to be that of anchoring that numinous act in principles and rules. But how would such accounts and records guide the dancer? Is there a productive link between the shastra and prayoga of dance? I suggest that till the 18th century, it's very rare. A long time ago, the 14th century Jaina author Sudha Kalasha lamented in his Sangeetopanishad Saradhara that the shastra of Natya had fallen into a poor state because scholars who wrote on Natya or Nritya did not understand what actors and dancers did, while actors and dancers had no idea what the scholars were talking about. Kalesmin nartaka murkha vidvansah sadhaka nahi na nartakan vinasbhyasah shastrat siddhirinatam vina. As time went by, dancers became ignorant and the scholars no longer remained practitioners. Without a dancer, there can be no practice and there is no success without the knowledge of shastra. The history of classical performing arts of India shows that this fear of a disjunction between precept and practice was well founded. Sudha Kalasha was partly anticipated by Kalidasa in Malavikagni Mitram when he said that a performer could only be perfect when she was trained by a teacher conversant in both theory and practice. Malavikagni Mitram, Act 1, verse 16. But this concern is absent from the bulk of performance-related disciplines in Sanskrit. Beginning with Bharata's Natya Shastra, a substantial number of accounts of dance and drama in Sanskrit have come down to us through the past two millennia. Barring a few, they are broad, descriptive accounts that do not offer much useful instruction to practicing artists. There are, however, exceptions, and here I shall focus on two such texts, Balarama Bharatam and Hastalakshana Deepika, both from Kerala, that seem to have been designed specifically as guides for practicing artists of the classical dances and dramatic forms prevalent in Kerala. These texts are proof that although the majority of writers on the performing arts of India in the Sanskritic scholarly tradition limited themselves to restating Bharata's descriptive account, some attempted to bridge the gap between the shastra of dance and its prayoga by turning their descriptions into elaborate and virtually step-by-step instructions, almost as a verbal notation. Evidently, these authors were responding to a need to correlate theory and practice, for their works were, and still are, received as practical handbooks in Kerala, as we find from performers of Kudiyattam, Kathakali, and Mohiniyattam. These texts are by no means outside the textual tradition initiated by Bharata, but their particular focus sets them apart from the majority of works within that tradition, which seem to aim at academic rather than practical understanding of the performing arts. Bharata wrote his Natya Shastra as a compendium of all available knowledge of his contemporary performing arts, at once providing a history of their origin, an aesthetic framework for understanding them, their validation, and descriptions of body movements. This scheme does not provide for practical instruction in the arts. Indeed, Bharata stops short of laying out dance compositions or acting scenarios, leaving it up to the performer to select, assemble, and compose performance pieces. Because of its encyclopedic character, Bharata's treatise has remained the ultimate source for all subsequent works in the field, amounting to over 30 extant Sanskrit discourses on dramaturgy written between 2nd and 18th centuries. Again, because of its authority and fame, many present-day dancers make the questionable claim that their art is directly derived from Bharata's work. In fact, the account that the Natya Shastra offers is descriptive, not instructional. Was Bharata concerned about the gap between Shastra and Prayoga in his text? I believe he was, and expressed his concern in the last chapter, the 37th, where he announces that Shesham Uttaratantrena Kohalastu Karishyati. Now, 37:18. Kohala will explain the rest in a subsequent work. Here, Bharata is acknowledging that there is more to be said on the matter and that his disciple Kohala would do so. Unfortunately, Kohala's Uttaratantra is lost. For some time now, I have been trying to recover it by gathering fragments of his work from quotations in early texts and manuscripts in various libraries. I have been able to collect about 400 of them. From what I have gathered, Kohala's work seemed to have had two objectives: to record regional and popular or folk forms of dance and drama, and to provide practical instruction. The concern for hand-on applicability appears in Abhinavagupta's commentary on the Natya Shastra, when he expands on the practical aspects of Angikabhinaya, or movements of the body. But he does not specifically question how useful dramaturgical texts might or ought to be for the performer. As I noted at the beginning, it was Sudha Kalasha who first expressed this concern explicitly. This led me to search for texts that could serve both as academic discourses and as practical guidebooks, and to my pleasure, I found that the concern for applicability and responses to it do appear in several works. One major example is the Abhinaya Darpana, a 13th century text, which is used by Bharatanatyam dancers as an instructional manual. Two other texts that are claimed to serve both theory and practice are Abhinaya Chandrika and Srihasta Muktavali, 14th and 15th century texts. Dates are debatable. Anyway, both used by Odissi dancers as manuals. Abhinaya Chandrika, edited by a commentary by Maya Das under the suggestive title Abhinaya Chandrika and Odissi Dance, and no mention of the author Maheshwar Mahapatra on the cover, is of doubtful help as a practical guide to performing artists. It does contain some terms specific to Odissi, but it follows mainly the Natya Shastra format or Sangita Ratnakara format of descriptions of gestures and movements, both mimetic and non-mimetic. Srihasta Muktavali, on the other hand, can and does serve as a manual. Nartana Nirnaya, a 16th century text, describes several dances, Turashka, Jakkadi, etc., that can be linked to modern Kathak dance. I have written somewhere else, elsewhere, in detail about this with some line drawings. It describes several dances as Turashka, Jakkadi, that can be linked to modern Kathak dance, as well as several other dances that can be linked to the Odissi Bandhanritta. At the end, I'll show the line drawings of Bandhanritta. I just want to get on. Sangita Narayana, an 18th century text from Orissa, describes Kashthanritta, a dance from Gujarat, and other classical and folk styles of today. In addition, there exist manuals in regional and regional languages used in South Indian temples and by dance masters. One such text on Abhinaya from Tirupati has recently come to light, of which a critical edition is currently being prepared by a researcher in Vadodara. From the very brief examination I could make on a recent trip to the government manuscript library in Vadodara, I believe this was composed as a guide to Kuchipudi style. Similar texts have come to light in Manipur, two of which, Govinda Sangita Leela Vilasa and Panchamasara Samhita, were edited and published by the noted dancer and Sanskrit scholar Guru Bipin Singh. Most of these guidebooks were written in late 17th and 18th centuries, which suggests that by then Sudha Kalasha's comment on the dissociation between theory and practice had become a common complaint, leading to efforts to produce manuals of practical utility, even though they remained true to the general scheme of the ancient Sanskritic textual tradition. Within that tradition of intellectual discourse, Balarama Bharatam and Hastalakshana Deepika, both of them Sanskrit works from the 18th century, stand out as attempts to provide practical guidance. Both relate to the Kathakali Mohiniyattam dance styles and to the Kudiyattam drama of Kerala. Kudiyattam is the only surviving performance of Sanskrit plays and has continued for 900 years within the temple precincts of Kerala. I showed the picture. Just as serious Bharatanatyam performers are required to learn Abhinaya Darpana by heart and recite its verses when they practice hand gestures and eye movements, the performers of Kerala's classical styles of dance and drama have to learn verses from Hastalakshana Deepika and Balarama Bharatam. Clearly, these texts are central to thinking about how theory and practice are related in the discourse of the performing arts. Hastalakshana Deepika stands out as a detailed course of instruction specializing in hand gestures used in Kathakali and Kudiyattam. To give a brief illustration, I may cite the pataka gesture, which is one hand held in a certain position. It is basic to all dance and abhinaya styles, and dramaturgical texts commonly describe it as a single piece of movement. In contrast, Hastalakshana Deepika presents as many as 20 separate positions of the gesture. This proliferation of description makes sense only as an attempt to guide the performer every inch of the way through a performance. Driven presumably by the same purpose, in place of 64 hand gestures described in Natya Shastra and other works, Hastalakshana Deepika describes over 500. Balarama Bharatam is a Sanskrit text written in the Malayalam script. Only one manuscript was found. The author was King Balarama Varma, not only a scholar but also a performer. Like other writers in the field, Balarama Varma, 18th century person, follows the basic descriptions of movements of various body parts as in Bharata and other Shastrakaras such as Sharangadeva, 13th century author of Sangeeta Ratnakara. The movement described relate to Abhinaya and are thus primarily relevant to dramatic presentations. Although, as the manuscript is incomplete, we do not know whether the entire work included descriptions of dance sequences as well. What the extant text offers us is a guide to Angikabhinaya, which includes different angas, upangas, pratyangas, to which are added one verse each on such essential units of a dance performance as asana, sthana, karana, gati, and mandala. There are no descriptions of angaharas or basic dance sequences. The author divides body movements into two categories, which he calls shabdika and arthika, terms that seem close to the usage in Bhoja's Shringara Prakasha, where padartha vinayatmaka and shabdartha vinayatmaka abhinayas are described in detail. Surprisingly, though Balarama does not elaborate on eye movements or hand gestures as most authors on abhinaya tend to do, and instead deals extensively with head movements, elbow movements, and arm movements. However, he does provide details of facial expression and movements of the feet as required in Kudiyattam and Kathakali. In choosing these categories of movements, the text remains within the conventional interests of dramaturgical discourse. Its uniqueness lies elsewhere. The author takes the descriptions much farther than we commonly find in treatises in the field by breaking down every movement or pose into its minutest imaginable component and providing a vast, elaborate sequence of motion. A good example is the treatment of one category of action performed with the shiras, or the head. This is sama. That is the action of the head held straight. In addition to explaining the application of the sama head in general, Balarama breaks down the movement into 13 separate positions, all building up one complete movement. These positions are sama dirgha kampitam, sama shirgha kampitam, sama kampitam, sama dhutam, sama vidhutam, sama abadhitam, sama chalitam, sama lalitam, and so on and so forth. This degree of elaboration may seem pointless until one attempts to try to perform the sama movement when its practical usefulness becomes apparent. In lieu of immediate and constant direction by an actual instructor, the text serves very well indeed, precisely because it takes the learner through the movement step by small step. Balarama Bharatam lays particular emphasis on facial expression and movements of the feet, as one might expect of a text closely connected with the performance traditions of Kerala. Movements of the face and of the feet are vital to Kudiyattam and Kathakali, which require performers to practice them with care and attention to detail. Let me give the example of just one upanga. This is nasika, the nasika, that is the nose, of which Balarama describes 16 movements as follows, just a few I'll read out. Avarta, unnatavarta, paryantavarta, antaravarta, nishyasa, uchhasa, savabhaviki, manda, so on and so forth. As against that, this wealth of detail, other writers such as Bharata and Sharangadeva list a mere 6. Again, this elaboration is useful more to the performer than to the academic reader. Balarama Varma concludes the description of each group of movements with the remark, Balarama Mahipala Chintita Bhinaye Muda Nasika Bhinayasya Tavad Eteshu Vinuyujyati. The crucial word here is Vinuyujyati, which denotes the primary importance of vinyoga, or practical application. Surprisingly, Balarama never mentions the use of these movements in non-referential dance or nritya. It is not that he does not mention nritya, but when it comes to detailing how movements are to be applied and to what kind of performance, it is abhinaya that he talks about. He regards nritya as based solely on tala, and thus presumably outside the scope of abhinaya. We might note that here that Bharata records the use of movements in both abhinaya and nritya, but says that they are used for different purposes. For instance, a hand gesture such as pataka can be used both in abhinaya and nritya. Bharata says that in presenting non-referential dance, the sole purpose of using pataka would be to embellish the performance. Shobhang prajanayat iti nrittam. Whereas in presenting representational and emotive dance, its purpose would be to express the meaning of a song. Balarama does not concern himself with this distinction between it is the performance of dramatic dance or not nritya that forms his subject. In many of the Sanskrit treatises on the performing arts, the wealth of detail seems bewildering and tedious. In the Balarama Bharatam and Hastalakshana Deepika, however, the detailed descriptions are purposeful because they are clearly oriented towards a scheme of guided instruction. These texts are thus responses to the charge that scholarly discourses lack practical applicability. At the same time, they also aid modern historians of the performing arts of India to draw a more precise map of these arts within the classical tradition. In that, they reveal to us the nature and practice of regional forms. The stylistic tradition that appears in Bharata's magisterial work and is elaborated upon by his followers seems to have been regarded from early. Thank you. This stylistic tradition that appears in Bharata's magisterial work and is elaborated upon by his followers seems to have been regarded from early times as the mainstream tradition as recognized by the term Marga, a post-Bharata invention that acknowledges the authority of the tradition as the preeminent one across India. But it is also clear that on its periphery existed other stylistic traditions arising out of local practice. As time went by, these were added to the central tradition by the authors of performing art texts and became known outside their places of origin. That is why, I think it is very important to note that, that is why we find descriptions, for instance, of the Odissi Bandha Nritya in Nartana Nirnaya, a text written in Rajasthan, or of Gujarati-style stick dances in Sangeeta Narayana, a work from Odisha. That is obviously a mark of cultural travel facilitated by, among other things, the sweep of Vaishnava ideology and practice across the subcontinent. But in recording the spreading local tradition, the role of written texts was vital, and particularly so when the texts concerned were geared to practical learning, for it was by unifying the shastra of dancing and acting with their prayoga that preceptors kept their arts alive for posterity. Thank you. I'll end up by just showing one last, this one. This is the Bandha Nritya described. This belongs to Odissi style. This is described in Nartana Nirnaya, 16 of them, and they are from Natya Shastra tradition. And this appears in Nartana Nirnaya, text from Rajasthan, but it is practiced in Odisha. And this is all temple, so I have tied it to temple, finally. Thank you. Thanks for your patience.